Okay, so we're gonna start now. Okay, so good evening. So what we're gonna do tonight is we're going to learn the differences, the basic differences between the malachos, the types of work that are forbidden on Yom Tov as opposed to Shabbos. Obviously, we know in general you can cook on Yom Tov, that you can't cook on Shabbos, and you can carry when there's no Erev on Yom Tov, not on Shabbos. What I'm gonna try to do is to broaden first the some of the basic differences and to give very concrete examples that take place. And of course, if there are any questions, feel free to ask, and I'll try to, if I don't know it, I will look into it. So in general, we begin. So on Shabbos, I'm just going to follow this outline. On Shabbos, the Torah says, Lo tasa kol malacha, do not do any malacha. On Yom Tov, we're told, kol maleches avoda lo tasu. In the Torah, we're told that when it comes to Yom Tov, it's not just all malacha, but it's only maleches avoda. Malacha, that's avoda, I guess literally means work. And also, there's another pasuk which is, ach asher yochel l'chol nefesh hu levado yaseh lachem. Any food, anything that is ach asher yochel l'chol nefesh, anything that's for ochel nefesh, for food preparation. And based on this, the Ramban understands that any malacha that a person typically does for food preparation for his household needs is permitted. In other words, there are two real conditions. Number one is, it's for food, ochel nefesh, and that's typically done for your own personal household needs. Types of malacha that are done for in mass quantities, that is not permitted. So it's only those which are done that are typically done for your personal household needs. Now, again, we're going to talk about broad categories. It could be that, and I'm going to explain this so it'll become clear. It could be that you might want to do a particular act for your own household need, but it could be if this malacha is generally done, or historically was generally done by the farmer and was done in large quantities, that would not be permitted on Yom Tov. I mean, just to give you an example, you could say that, let's say you have an apple tree in the backyard. Oh, so I'm just picking up an apple. I'm taking an apple off the tree and I'm eating it. It's ochel nefesh for now. It's my own personal needs right now. It's for household needs. I'm not collecting a whole hoard of apples and selling them. So that should be permitted. So the answer is that certain malachos are categorized as typically the malacha of picking an apple off the tree is kotzer. You're detaching something from being something that's attached to the ground. You're detaching it. That malacha, big picture, is typically done by the farmers in large quantities. So that malacha is forbidden. So there are different categories of malacha. Essentially, there are three categories of malacha on Yom Tov. The first category involves, and again, things will become clearer as we give examples. I'm just giving broad outline. Again, first it has to be ochel nefesh, and it has to be something that you typically use for household needs. The first category involves those malachos that are typically done in small quantities for the needs of individual households. And examples are cooking, burning, extinguishing. There's something called, in halachic terms, milisha ve'elach. Extinguishing a flame, lessening a flame. Let's say, for example, the food's going to burn. Okay, so then you might be able to lower it. We're going to get it. We're going to discuss that in detail. Okay, but yeah.
Quick question. So here we're making the difference between actually doing the malacha for the sake of the food. Like let's say it's a malacha that's typically done for food purposes, for food preparation purposes, and would qualify under the small household preparation, but you're not actually using it for food preparation.
Oh, so that's what's known. Good. So Shira, we're going to talk about that in a second. That's what's known as mitoch. So for example, what she has articulated, so probably better than I just could have done it, is there's something called in the Gemara and Beah that says mitoch shehutra Havara litzorach hutra namishal litzorach, because let's say kindling a flame for purposes of eating is permitted, so you could also kindle flame for the purpose of light. Yeah, so that works under for some malachos. Yeah, it doesn't work for kibbutz. But I'm just telling you, there are certain categories. Let's say for our purposes, there are certain malachos that if it's done for food purposes and maybe even for not food purposes, like cooking, burning. It's called in Chazal, some of you'll hear the term milisha ve'elach. Lisha is kneading, kneading dough. So like there are the Mishnah in Shabbos talks about the 39 malachos, and the first I believe 11 malachos involve the bread preparation. So you first plant, and then you dig, you plow, you plant. And there's all the then you I know you harvest, and there's all these different steps. And I didn't go to farming school, but there are all these different steps. So you could make the argument that maybe I'm allowed to plant on Yom Tov because it's preparation for the eating. So it's only really the last steps, milisha, when you're kneading, and then the cooking, sort of the latter steps. But there are certain malachos that categorically they're permitted on Yom Tov. There's a second category of malachos that are typically done in large quantities and for commercial purposes, and they are generally forbidden, such as harvesting, as we said, kotzer, like picking an apple off a tree, even though you would argue that I'm doing this for my own personal use. That malacha of kotzer is categorically forbidden. Threshing and also trapping. Let's say you want to trap an animal. You're actually allowed to slaughter. You're allowed to shecht. You're allowed to slaughter on Yom Tov if you want. You know. But that's not so practical now.
No.
Okay,
it's good then.
No, okay, yeah. So you're like, okay, so the malacha.
You can't cover the beans on the surface because that's trapping,
right? Right. Well, you see, the truth is, you are, actually, I'm not going to talk about that particular case, but you're allowed to, if you're concerned. You see, flies you probably couldn't do, bees you could, because it's, for various reasons, a bee is not typically trapped, so worst case scenario, it's an Isser Drabbana, it's a rabbinic prohibition to trap, and if you're afraid you're going to get stung, so that's called B'makom Tsar, in cases of distress or to provide to prevent pain, lo gozu rabbanon, the rabbis didn't initiate that decree. But you're right. In other words, the malacha of tzeda is it could be for food purposes, because you classically tzeda was you trap an animal in order to eventually eat it, shecht it, and maybe skin it, whatever the case is, and eat it. So now I understand. So that's another reason why for a bee. Trapping a bee may only be an Issur Drabbanan because it's not for that purpose. So, and bees aren't typically trapped for those purposes, so it's only an Issur Drabbanan. So there's the reason why that's knocked down to Drabbanan permitted is not because that category of Tzeda is permitted on Yom Tov. It's because since it's done in an unusual way, there's a technicality that's missing in your classic Malach of Tzad, which knocks it down to a rabbinic prohibition, and that's permitted B'makom Tzar. Okay? So now there's a third category. So it would be really nice if we could have two different categories. Those malachos that are typically done for food preparation and they're done in small quantities, and those that are done in large quantities. And of course there are the middle category, which are sometimes they're sometimes done in small quantities and sometimes done in large quantities. An example we're going to give is the malacha of toche, like a coffee grinder, spice grinder. We're going to get into details. The reason why there are differences in the malacha of toche, that some types of toche means to grind or cut into small pieces, some types are permitted and some types are forbidden, because the malacha of toche is sometimes done in large quantities and out in the fields, kind of, but it was sometimes also done for household needs. At least when the rabbis were sort of categorizing the malacha. So again, what we've said so far is on Yom Tov it's malachas avoda and ochel nefesh, and we talked about the three different categories. So the examples of the third category would be grinding, which is tochid, and sorting, which is borer. Now let's a few more general rules before we give the specific malachos that we're going to talk about. The Rama writes, this is the first source that I have here, this is in Hilchos Yom Tov, Simon Tav Tzadi Hei Saif Aleph. So the Rama writes, V'yesh machmirin, afilu ba'ochel nefesh atzmo, kol she'eno mefig tam klal, imaso me'erav Yom Tov. Some are strict that say the following, that when do we say you can, let's say, cooking? When do we say you're allowed to cook on Yom Tov? That's only in a situation where what? If you would cook it before Yom Tov, the taste would be negatively impacted. That you want something fresh. But Mihu imlo aso me'erv yom tov yesh botzach yom tov muter la'asol so ayde shinoi. However, if you did not, let's say, for example, you could have done this malacha on Erev Yom Tov. Let's say you could have cooked something on Erev Yom Tov, and it would have tasted exactly the same as on Yom Tov, and you didn't. You said, I'm going to wait till Yom Tov. The goal, the reason why we would rather you not do malacha on Yom Tov is because we want you to enjoy Yom Tov. Slay before Yom Tov and enjoy Yom Tov. But the point is that we want to try. There are some people who, like, they... I know some people, they try, I mean, it's hard, we have to work very hard before Yom Tov, but they try to have a situation where Yom Tov, they're going to do very little preparation because they want to enjoy it. So the halacha is that if you could have done it before Yom Tov without adversely affecting the taste of the food, so then you can only do it on Yom Tov with a shinoi. If you do something a little bit in an unusual manner, when it comes to cooking, this rule almost never applies, because people always like fresh food, and even with the advent, there's been discussion amongst the postgame. We have refrigerators now, so there might not be such a difference in taste whether you could have done it, you know, whether they say you could have cooked it before and stored it in the refrigerator or the freezer. In practice, the general rule is when it comes to cooking, maybe, I think, fruit soup, maybe, they say maybe that you could have cooked beforehand. But for the most part, when it comes to cooking, it seems that the poskim take the view that you don't have to do a shinur, let's say, when it comes to cooking, because it's always fresher if it's cooked on Yom Tov than if it was before Yom Tov. Same thing with baking as well. Okay, so that's one big picture rule, that if you could have done it before Yom Tov, you should do it before Yom Tov. But if you weren't able to, or you weren't able to do it, then do a little bit of a shooting, and we'll give a little bit of it in an unusual manner, and we'll give examples when we discuss specific malachos. And then, however, and this rule, by the way, this is, I have here the Mishnah Berurah and Siman Tav Tzadi Hei Seif Katan Yud, where he says that you can do it through a shinoi, but let's say it was an ones, let's say it was an unavoidable circumstance, okay, then you don't have to do a shinoi. But again, when it comes to cooking, for the most part, we generally assume, and we'll see, the taste will be adversely affected, so you don't have to cook with a shinur in an unusual manner on Yom Tov. There's another halacha, which is may not be so well known, which is a little difficult, especially when it comes time for Pesach. Some people like to, invite a lot of people, or maybe their neighbors. There is a rule, if their neighbors are not Jewish, and there's, let's say, sometimes, unfortunately, so was in a situation where they have perhaps, you know, intermarried children, whatever the case is. So this runs into a problem inviting someone on Yom Tov. The Shulchan Aruch writes in Hilchos Yom Tov, Siman Tav Kuf Yud Beis Seif Aleph. The Shulchan Aruch writes, Ein Mavashim L'Tzorach Kutim B'Yom Tov L'Fichach Asir Lazmino Shemo Yarmah Bishvilo. So there are sort of two different rules here. We're not allowed to cook for the purposes of non-Jews on Yom Tov. The reason is because it's a technical reason. The only reason why you're allowed to cook on Yom Tov is for the mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov. In other words, we're allowed to cook for ourselves on Yom Tov or for other Jews so that they can fulfill the mitzvah of Simcha, of happiness on Yom Tov. They fulfill the mitzvah of Simcha through eating good food. That's why also, by the way, you can't cook on Yom Tov, let's say, for the next day, let's say for after Yom Tov. Forget about for the next day also, we'll get that in a second. But conceptually, to cook for, let's say, you know, for the next day also, that's also not permitted, because the concept is we only allow cooking or even food preparation if it's for the mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov. A non-Jew has no mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov, so they don't, in other words, they don't have that allowance of what? Ach asher yechel l'chol nefesh u'levado yetzeh lechem. It's tied to the mitzvah of Simcha, l'chol nefesh, for the mitzvah of Simcha, so we don't cook for non-Jews on Yom Tov. You're allowed, and therefore, this is explicit Shulchan Aruch. It's aser lazmino. You're not allowed to invite a non-Jew. Shema yarbe bishvilo, because you might increase. Once you know they're coming, you might increase the cooking for them. This is a gzeira. Shabbos, it's not a problem. You can invite You can invite non-Jews to your house for Shabbos. The difference is because we're not concerned that you're going to cook on Shabbos. We're talking about from people who are following halacha. We're not concerned that if you invite a non-Jew on Shabbos to dine with you, that they want to experience Shabbos. So we're not concerned that you're going to cook for them.
Would that mean? It's a hypothetical question, sure. Could you not invite someone who is looking to become a
gay? Very good. So there are a couple of exceptions. And this is a really a broader conversation. I might give a different share on this. It's a topic into itself, but some of the parameters. So number one is Rav Gedalia Dov Schwartz. I don't know if everyone holds it. I believe it's an Achiezer. Rav Gedalia Dov Schwartz, Paskin, we had someone here in the community. They moved out. So he told me, I had them for Seder, for Pesach Seder. Hope. I can still be your rabbi, but I did that. So he said. Rabbi David Schwartz said, for the purpose, without getting into the details of the alumnus of it, but he said, if someone's in the purpose, this prohibition, the question is how he gets to it. He said, this doesn't apply to someone who's in the process of conversion. There's also another thing. If they, let's say they come anyway uninvited, you don't have to tell them. No. I've had situations where that's happened also, where let's say someone last minute, you cooked already and someone came, someone said they're doing it, so that might also be okay under some circumstances. Wait 1 second.
Let's say you're making food for 15 people and this non-Jewish person is coming, you're not necessarily going to be adding
correct
a huge meal for them, so is it still usher to have?
Yeah, because here's the concern. The concern is that, well, first of all, gezeros are generally, if you think of gezeros, decrees, so that's, it doesn't always, sometimes they don't, when we make gezeros, they don't always fit every single category, and sometimes they make bright line rules. So they'll say, let's say, for example, let's say you're cooking for them, and you run out of food in the middle. Oh, let me quickly make some more food. I mean, sometimes it happens, right, where you have, some people, they cook an enormous amount for Yom Tov, and they always have a lot of leftovers. But sometimes maybe you see, oh my gosh, I didn't realize I'd invite this one, that one, the other one. Let me do a little more in the kitchen. So then you may run into that problem. Sorry, you had a question.
So this is not that you can't invite them on Yom Tov. This is
even before.
Yeah. Because you can't invite them to join you.
Correct. Because
you're cooking for them. What if you're cooking for them before Yom Tov?
No, but because it's the same issue. I'm saying it's the same issue because we're concerned. This is this case. It's a geder. We're concerned that you might, when you are, let's say during the meal, you run out of food and you might end up cooking more for the person.
And is there a difference between Pesach what? And other Yom Tov? Because I know we're machmir about this for Pesach Seder in particular.
No, the reason why we're machmir, I think the reason why we're machmir is for the Pesach Seder in particular, because that's when people tend to invite their extended family.
I didn't realize
Right. It's not Pesach specific. It's probably most relevant when it comes to Pesach. It's a very difficult situation because, you know, that's when people invite all their extended family, right, and it gets touchy.
I thought it had to do with Yetzias Mitzrayim. You're not supposed to share it.
With that one. You say Sukkos, you can, because Sukkos is it's not called
Yeah. But this is only for
non-Jews. Right. Oh yeah. So for a non-religious Jew, you can invite. There's a discussion about non-religious Jew like a mumar, and sometimes they non-religious Jews are perhaps, but in practice, most poskim say that someone who's not observant for these purposes, a tinok shenishba, like a child who is brought up, it's not his fault, whatever the case is. The poskim are lenient when it comes to non-observant Jew. Okay? So one thing, it has to be for Jews, and another halacha is, this is in Simon Tavkuf Gimel, Saif Aleph, also lefosel levashel lishchot biyom tov letzarch machor. You can't bake, cook, or shecht an animal on Yom Tov for the next day. Afilu hu Shabbos Yom Tov, afilu b'sheyom shel Rosh Hashana, whether the next day is Shabbos, of course, unless you do an Erev Tavshilin, which is, we're not going to talk about this, that we know of the Erev Tavshilin, or the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. You can't cook from one day to the next. Aval, so we know generally that you cannot cook for one day for the next. Right? There are some exceptions. It says, Aval memala isha kedeira basar. Afal pi she'ena tzricha ela chaticha achas. So first of all, let's say you have a piece of meat. You have to be very careful that I want to be very precise about this. Let's say you have a piece of meat on your pot. and let's say you have two or three pieces of meat in your pot, and then that's all you need, two or three pieces for the Yom Tov, right? And you want to add more, and there's a dual purpose. One is because you want to save for later, for the next day, but there's another purpose, which if you add more meat, it will add taste to the pot, right? Is that correct? No. Right, good, okay. I've never done it before. Whatever. Right. Yeah. No, I'm saying, well, add taste to it. No, so so you add more meat, it adds taste. So if there's a dual purpose, as long as you don't say it explicitly, if there's a dual purpose, you would be allowed to do that. Okay? In other words, this is explicit. It's explicit, Shulchan Aruch, Tavkuf Gimel, Seif Aleph, that he writes here, this is the Mishnah Berurah, Seif Katan Hey. He writes, even you have the pot with meat on the stove. Muteres lo sif basar. You're allowed to add more meat. Bipnesha tafshil metukan yoser, kasheshon basar be. Because the food is more prepared, it's more tasty when there's more meat. It adds flavor. So even if there's a dual purpose, that's okay.
This is a pot that's already cooking on the first day of Yom Tov.
Correct.
And you're going to eat it when?
I'm sorry. Let me make this 100% clear. You're going to eat it on the first day of Yom Tov. You're allowed to add more meat to it.
So you'll have leftovers for the next.
So you're adding taste to the meat that's already there.
Right.
And that meat you don't have to eat it that day. You can have it on the next day. Even if you have enough meat, obviously you're allowed to estimate. You don't say, well, I'm going to have this one. You get a half. You get three quarters. We'll dig a whole flow chart for the past year, whatever it ate. I'll give an exact amount. You can sort of estimate. That's fine. But I'm saying, even if you know I'm adding these five or six extra pieces of meat, right? I'm not going to eat today. But I do believe that it does add flavor, and there's a dual purpose that would be permitted.
But you have to try not to have leftovers.
No, I say you don't have to. I say you don't have to. You can estimate. I'm saying you can estimate. If you know for sure that you're not going to have, the truth is, it's only rabbinically forbidden. There's a principle called Hoel that maybe their guests may come last minute, but if your intent, so you can, as long as it's possible that someone could eat it, then it might only be rabbinically forbidden. But if you intend, I'm adding some pieces of meat here, I know for sure that my intent is that I'm, you know, the meat's already, the pot's already on the fire. I know for sure I'm not going to eat today. I'm going to have it for tonight. So that would not be permitted unless there's another purpose, which is you're adding flavor to the existing meat. Okay? Now, the Mishnah Berurah goes on to say, V'chozeh shayach davka kishemavashel basar v'dagim b'kedera. So that is that's specifically relevant when you're cooking meat or fish in a pot. I guess because that's like that adds flavor. You add more fish or more meat. Aval bishar tavshilin, but with other cooked foods, ein arasha lahosif bishvil laila. You can't add because you want to have more at night. Kishomedes kvar hagder al esh. Once the pot is already on the fire, deino mosif shevach aydei zeba tavshil. Right, because you're not adding anything. Also, if you're, let's say, roasting, you're putting it on a spit. Right? If you're just on different, like a shish kebab, so when you add another piece of meat on there, they're not adding any flavor to what's existing. When it's already on the fire. Aval, however, however, what you could do, let's say you have, you prepared, say before Yom Tov, you prepared, a lot of pieces of shish kebab, okay? And so let's say you have 20 pieces, and you know that I'm only going to have 10. If they're just easy to, you just put them all in, you'll be allowed to do that. If it's one tircha, one burden, one hard. It's hard to know the exact parameters. I'll give you another example of this. Let's say you want to add water to the urn, and you only want one cup. You only want one cup. You can fill the urn up because that's one tircha. Now, just one second. So then I did something halachot. Like I, after in the mornings after Shachar. So sometimes I do like a 2-minute halacha. So I was going over this halacha. So Ben Lipschitz asked me, he said, well, when you're adding water to the urn, is it only permitted if you use the faucet? Because the sink, the faucet, because that's basically, you're just opening it, or can you just keep adding extra cups? Is that multiple tier cups? Is that going to be your question?
No.
Oh, sorry, okay. No. So anyway, so yeah, so that's a good question. So I wasn't sure. I called Rabbi Willig, I saw what he thought. I said, on the one hand, I first thought that might be multiple tirchas, but I don't know if that's so much multiple tirchas, because the other example, when you have pieces of meat that you're taking, right, different pieces of, you're, that's what you're doing. You're taking 10, we don't say you have to like just put them all together. It means that, you put them all at once. I think once you have them all, once it's on the, like if you put them all at once and then start it in a permitted way, so then that would be permitted. So that's just like, it's a general parameters. I think a good example is like the urn. You can fill up the whole urn with water, even though you only need, let's say, one cup. I'm sorry, now I think your question.
Yeah, no, I was thinking when you were saying that, like a noodle, a kugel,
right,
that you're going to use on both days.
Right.
So theoretically, you could only make half and then have to make half.
Right.
But if you're making the kugel or anything, you could make it bigger for 2 days.
But you make it
one,
right. Yeah, I think. Yeah. They talk about if it's, let's say, a different piece of schnitzel, and this, I saw this at Panini Halacha, and this is Rabbi Melamed Sefer, and he said if you have to like bread each piece of schnitzel separately, so that wouldn't be allowed. No. In other words, you to add on. In other words, you could bread the schnitzel for that day. But I'm saying for the next day, if you're breading schnitzel, if you're doing the bread, if you bread each piece separately, now just to put a piece of chicken, an extra piece, let's say when you're putting chicken, piece of chicken on, let's say, or in the pot or on the stovetop or on the grill, whatever it is. So you put instead of 5 pieces, you put 10 pieces all at once, and then you ignite it in a permitted way. So that would be permitted. But if on Yom Tov you are preparing each piece separately, so that would be an issue. Okay.
So the shish kebab that you talked about would be skewered each one.
Yeah. So you're saying?
For the schnitzel, you're frying it in separate batches. So like each.
But he talks about like adding the breadcrumbs to each. You say, could you add the vegetable to...
Well, you said a skewer.
Yeah, well, that's what he said. That's what he writes here. That's what he writes here. He says, Avo batchila yochel lehozif al hashpud kama sheyirtza. Right, I guess if you're preparing... Right, I guess... So I guess if it's already prepared beforehand, probably, right? I guess you're right. It's hard to know. The truth is, it's very hard to clarify exactly. I think the case of Mishnah Berurah was, let's say you have a bunch of skewers beforehand prepared. Right, just putting it on there. Yeah. It's hard to know where you draw the line. What's the one tircha versus multiple tirchas? It's not, I don't think it's easy to clarify.
But
so,
Rabbi,
yeah.
I'm not confused, because let's say my family has 2 adults.
Right.
There's no way we're going to eat a whole chicken.
Right.
On one meal.
Right. So you can make one chicken. No, you don't have to. No, you can make. No.
Isn't this only if you're cooking on Yom Tov?
Right, it's only
for example,
on Yom Tov.
If I choose to cook everything before Yom
Tov,
that's
fine.
Fine.
Yeah.
You can make as much.
We're talking about on Yom Tov. Yeah, you can cook a whole chicken. That's fine. Yeah. We're talking about where you're cooking another piece. You make what you're saying is the following. Let's say you have a bunch of pieces of schnitzel, right? And so you want to add ones that you're not going to necessarily use, or you sliced up meat. Let's say you sliced up meat, and on Yom Tov you want to cook, put the meat in a pot. So individual slices would be a problem unless they're adding taste to it. That's one of the goals. Okay, so now we're going to talk about individual malachos. Okay, so the first is Bishul and Afia, cooking and baking. This falls under the category of malachos, which are typically used for household use and in smaller quantities. They're not generally, we don't cook and we don't bake for commercial use. They're generally done for household needs. And so therefore, this is generally in the permitted categories of malacha. And as I mentioned, under almost all circumstances, you could cook or bake without a shinoi. It's unusual. You could cook. You don't have to do anything unusual because food tastes better if it was cooked and or baked on the day we eat it. We may not cook food during Yom Tov day for the Yom Tov night meal, except under the circumstances noted above. Okay?
So back to the circumstance that I brought up in the beginning, are you allowed to heat water even if it's not for food purpose? For example, for bathing purpose.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about shower and bathing. We'll get there in a second. That's Havara.
Could you cook in the nighttime for the daytime?
Yes. So let me make this clear. Yes. Yeah, no, it's a fair question. No, I understand.
My mom never did. So
okay, so it could be. No, so we're going to talk about it. No, I understand why, maybe. Well,
because you don't need it right away. Like,
right. So that's a very important difference. By the way, I think that people listening to this year are going to get more leniencies than stringencies. I think. I could be wrong, but you can let me know after. I'll tell you why, because I think that people generally assume that whatever is forbidden on Shabbos is forbidden on Yom Tov, except with cooking. There are other differences. And one of them is what sort of Nechama mentioned. We're going to see that certain malachos, let's say borer, which you're sorting. So borer is generally only permitted. There are a bunch of conditions, and one of them has to be immediate. But for Yom Tov, though, thank you for pointing this out. For Yom Tov, it's not the requirement of being immediate. It's for that halachic day. So that's probably maybe the confusion. Maybe
that day, not that meal.
Right, for that day, exactly. Right. So I'm saying that's where we're much more lenient on Yom Tov than we are on Shabbos in that regard. Okay, so Bishal Afia, that's generally okay. Okay, the next is Tochen. Okay, so you can grind or crush food on Yom Tov in a normal manner. If doing so before Yom Tov would impair its taste on Yom Tov. I got a lot of the examples from Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, written by Rav Neuvert. Examples include mashing or grating, as the case may be, bananas, potatoes, and onions. Apparently, if you do that beforehand, it won't taste as good. Even with a specialized knife or grater. Okay? So you can even use a special, even with, okay, because that is yes. Okay. However, spices, okay, when it comes to spices and coffee, some poskim say that maybe you could have done it before Yom Tov, and therefore you can still grind spices or coffee with a grinder. Again, we're talking about non-electric. I know what a spice grinder is, and I looked up what a coffee grinder is. I don't do coffee, but apparently there are things that you turn whatever, right? So they're also electric grinders, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, guys. I'm not okay. So I did okay. So I learned a lot for these things, Torah and Mada. Okay. So you're allowed to grind. You use a coffee grinder. You're allowed to use a spice grinder, but do a slight shinoi, which I gave an example. If you normally grind it on a plate, use a paper towel. So what's the difference? They're different. When we talk about a shinoi, by the way, this is big picture. There are shinoyim and there are shinoyim. A shinoi means an unusual manner. Depending on the situation, sometimes a shinoi requires something very significant. Like, for example, to knock a Torah prohibition to a rabbinic prohibition, okay, there you need a significant shinoi. Okay, that's not our topic now. The shinoi here is essentially just so you remember that you should only use a household coffee grinder or a household spice grinder and not a more commercial, you know, type of grinder. So this is like a mini shinoi. This is like really anything that's a little bit different. So like an example would be if you normally use a paper plate to grind on it, so use a paper towel, hold it upside down. Anything that's a little bit, that deviates a little bit, that would be permitted to use, again, for bananas, potatoes, which clearly you couldn't have done beforehand and had the same taste. You don't need to use a shinoi. For a coffee grinder, for a spice grinder, so that do a slight shinoi.
Anything dry, probably.
Probably
anything dry.
Right. You can use a cheese grater to grate cheese. This is that also, but it says that's, but no, but here's it with cheese, also with a slight cheddar, because that may also, and then if it's previously ground foods, let's say baked goods, you can grind that also on Yom Tov. Let's say you have cookies. Let's say you have some cookies and you want to, I don't know, grind them up, make crumbs and put it on top of a, yeah, pretty good, right? Put it on top, use it as a topping or something. So that you can grind in a normal manner.
But,
oh, yeah. Why do I like people mashing eggs?
What?
But I know in Shabbos, if you want to make egg salad, you have to.
Right, so eggs, so with eggs, right, so eggs, I don't think, if you do it beforehand, that would probably impair the taste, no? Yeah, so I think eggs you probably could do in a normal manner. I just double check that, but I believe that eggs are probably. I believe.
Mashing the same as grinding?
Yeah,
if
yeah.
Mash,
yeah.
It's the
same thing. Same thing. Mashing is the same thing. Yeah.
Can
opener differently, right? The can opener. There's no real difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov when it comes to the can opener. Okay. Yeah, we never took that topic yet, but okay. Let's talk about sorting. Okay. Okay. Let's talk about sorting. Borer. Borer is also one of these middle categories. Okay. Borer is one of these middle categories where sometimes the farmers would engage in sorting to remove the chaff from the bad from the good in large quantities, and sometimes people would use in their household. This is an example where on Shabbos you need three conditions to allow borer. It has to be ochel mitok psos, the good from the bad. It has to be alter immediate, however that's defined. I think we gave a share on this once. And the third is with your hand and not with a utensil used for sorting. So, but it comes to Yom Tov, you can separate as long as you want to. You separate for use on that particular halachic day, the night for the next morning, the day for later on the day. But the goal is like Simchas Yom Tov, you want it to minimize the work. So you should sort in the easiest manner possible. Whereas on Shabbos, you always have to sort the good from the bad, because what you want to eat, right? Because you're ochel mitok psos. Basically, on Shabbos, what you're doing is when you sort the food, it's called derech achila. You're sorting it in order to eat it, as opposed to just to do it for. To just to sort it and not to use it right away. So if you're using it right away, what do you want to take out? What you're going to put in your mouth? When it comes to Yom Tov, there's none of this requirement of right away. The goal is that you could be sorting it, that you could be preparing it as long as it's for a food preparation purpose for that day. And therefore, but you want to do the easiest way possible, whether it means selecting the wanted from the unwanted or vice versa, whatever is easier to do. Generally, probably whatever is smaller, let's say if you have a mixture and if what you want is a smaller amount, that's probably easier to, it's generally easier to remove the smaller amount. Mm-hmm. Right? Okay.
So the difference is immediately or within that day?
So that's one difference. And the second difference also is that on Shabbos, you have to do ochel mitok psoles. You have to separate the good from the bad. And on Yom Tov, you just have to do what's easier. If there's like a little bit of bad stuff in the mixture, the good stuff, you just remove the bad stuff. So that's also fine. And you can certainly use a kli, a household utensil that is used for sorting, like a peeler, a slotted spoon. And the big thing is you can strain noodles. Okay. Not everyone holds like this. I believe Rabbi Willick holds that. I believe he holds that you can use even a peeler, let's say, to peel apples on Shabbos. The reason is because not everyone agrees to this. But the reason is because if you think about it, when you peel an apple or you peel something, you're also peeling the good and the bad. In other words, you're not only peeling off the bad.
You're taking off a little bit of
it. You're taking off the good also as well. But anyway, even those who are what?
Very little if you use a good.
Okay, so maybe, so right, so very little, but he said that you're...
Right.
So the, well, no, oh, so, okay, so the def, okay, so that's a fair question, Aline. The definition of ochel mitok psoles is, it's probably not is probably more precisely defined as wanted versus unwanted. You can the macha borer. Let's say you have peanuts and raisins, right? And you want the peanuts, not the raisins. So the peanuts consider good, the raisins consider bad, or vice versa. And it's what you want now is considered "quote unquote" the good. So it's really the wanted part. But in any case, even if you're strict about peelers, you certainly use it, or a slotted spoon. You can certainly use that on Yom Tov, and you can use a strainer for noodles. So that you can use on Yom Tov, and you can sort clothing that you want to wear that day. Yes, you can sort clothing that you want to use for that day, for that halachic day.
Unless you pick out of the basket.
Oh, no, I'm saying if you're simply picking out whatever comes to you, then you put away. Or however, that's fine. But if you deliberately say, okay, let me find, and let's say like this, I want to pick out, I have all this laundry for my kids or whatever. I want to pick out the clothes they're going to wear at night. I'm going to pick out what clothes they're going to wear tomorrow morning. So you let's say on Shabbos, say, okay, I want these shirts and I want these pair of pants. So if he's not wearing it right now, he's wearing it tomorrow morning, that fails the condition of for immediate use. But on Yom Tov, you don't have that yet. We passed the Yom Tov test. Okay. I'm very excited about the next topic, Havara, because I was able to reach Rav Heineman. Okay, we'll see why. Because about turning up the flame on the stove, I got some good results here. So we got some good stuff here. So we may kindle a flame. So obviously on Yom Tov, you can kindle a flame from an existing flame, but you cannot strike a match to light a new flame, because according to some Rishonim, like the Rambam, you could have done that before Yom Tov. Okay. It's an issur d'rabbanan. It's a rabbinic prohibition in general. I don't think I wrote this here, but generally speaking, if there's something where, let's say, you need you have to have someone turn. Let's say, for example, you need the light turned on, or you can't eat in the room. Let's say you can't eat, and you need the light to be turned on, or let's say you need this. You need to strike a match so you can cook something. So we're dealing with an issur on Yom Tov. We're dealing with an issur d'rabbanan, rabbinic prohibition. And there's a general rule which is on Yom Tov, shvus to shvus, b'makom mitzvah or b'makom tzorach is permitted. So you have a lot more leniency to tell a non-Jew, if you're going to have no food, for them to strike the match to cook your food. If you're stuck, you have all raw food, and you're stuck. So you would be allowed to tell it on you directly to strike the match, so that you have a fire that eventually you can use to cook, because on Yom Tov, striking a match is a rabbinic prohibition. You're telling it on you. It's a double drabbanan for a makom tzorach. So it's important to know on Yom Tov, this prohibition of striking a match is a rabbinic prohibition. Now, you're allowed to raise the temperature of an existing flame on a stovetop if you definitely know that by doing so, you are merely strengthening the electric current flowing through the coil. However, if by doing this, we generate electric current flowing through another coil, then we would not be allowed to do this on Yom Tov. In other words, let's say you have a stovetop, right? So let's say an electric stovetop. So the gas, that's pretty straightforward, right? You just turn it up, and then the fire is... So that's not an issue. You can turn it up. But let's say you have a glass stovetop. So the question is, when you turn it up, are you simply making that one coil just get hotter? Or maybe there's another coil there, and let's say when you go from number 2 to number 3, or number 3 to 5 or 6, there's another coil that's going on, and that's like striking a match.
You know, why would that be like striking a match?
Because
your current still emanates from your power source.
Okay, that would you make the same argument even the first. Okay, so that was a debate. No, so okay. So I'm not gonna. It's a fair right. So it's only about. So the question is how you view.
It doesn't sound like this is a Havara issue as much as it is if you're saying the closing your circus is building issue.
Yeah.
If one thing, but Havara doesn't
doesn't really apply here.
Okay, right, I understand. That's a big question. We could maybe have a broader discussion about this, but what I'm saying is about 60, 70 years ago, so a lot of, they say Rav Soloveitchik even, he might turn on, even on lights on Yom Tov, but he won't turn it off. The meeting nowadays, we don't do that on Yom Tov, so I'm working with that assumption. Okay. I don't know. They say that. I don't know how accurate it is. I don't know. It used to be.
Everybody turned on lights.
Right. It used to be. It was much more common. It was much more common practice. Was this an issue of science or halacha? We could have a discussion. First of all, the purpose of this year is to do like very bottom line, not to go in depth, but I'd be happy to have that conversation with you another time to go into depth about this discussion about turning on, electric currents, turning on lights on Yom Tov. So there was, there was an issue in general about how you treat electricity in general. Okay, there was that question, right? In general, even on Shabbos. So then they decided, we think it's something. I don't know, Rosh Hashanah, as Omer says, we'll treat it as molid, you're creating something, or which is havara. So there's a question how you treat electricity in general on Shabbos. And then there's the question of turning on a switch on Yom Tov. Is that really like striking a match? So I'm working with the assumption that it is. We could debate that point, but that's a general psak. That being said, the question is, when you turn on the stovetop, let's say from 3 to 5 or 5 to 7, or you go from low to high, is there another coil that's being turned on?
I don't know.
So Rabbi Willick said, I don't know. We have to figure out. So I said, what if it's red hot? Like if it's red hot right now. So Rabbi Willick didn't know. So then I went to my, I have to give credit where credit's due. I sent to my Parsha WhatsApp group, my Parsha Shiur WhatsApp group. I said, who knows electricians or engineers or electrical engineers? So Jason Clore gave me Rav Heinemann's phone number. So I called Rav Heinemann. I spoke to his wife for a couple of days. We had a nice conversation for a few days. I still couldn't track him down. I finally was able to track Rav Heinemann down. Rav Heinemann from Baltimore, he apparently knows like all this stuff. Like he knows, he's very well of like the reality of Mitzvah.
The Shabbos, right.
So I don't necessarily, it's okay.
I know,
I don't know where Bill Hill on that, but okay. But the point is, Rav Heinemann, but in terms of the Mitzvah, Rav Heinemann was aware, so Rav Heinemann told me that there is only one coil in the new electric stovetops. I don't know what new means, but the new ones, unless you have one that's 20 years old or 10 years old, whatever it is, the new electric stovetop, there's only one coil.
The glass top, yes.
The glass top, there's only one coil, which is good news for these purposes. And therefore, if the coil is bright red, you can raise the temperature for purposes of cooking. Okay? So if it's
already high, probably.
No, so whatever, if it's red, I'm saying if it's on, as evidenced by the fact that it's red, you can raise the temperature because, according to Rav Heinemann, there's only one coil in the newer models. Okay?
The newer model.
Yeah.
So,
they're probably good. There's a problem.
What about lowering it?
Okay, we'll get there in a second. Okay?
It has to be red in order to make it hot.
Correct. Right.
But
there may not be current flowing on it. I assume what happens in the stovetop, I believe this is the case, is that let's say sometimes it may fluctuate when it gets a certain temperature.
Yeah. Right.
So it might go on or off.
Yes.
So you're allowed to raise it. You're allowed to strengthen. You're allowed to brighten or make the coil redder when the current is when it's flowing, when the electric current is flowing.
As long as it's on.
Right.
We're not talking about whether you see it as red.
Well, the question is how.
See it is red. It's always if it's on.
So that's why I want to say buy it.
So how do you know?
So in other words, what you're saying is, and I've had this argument with Amy. What you're saying is that it has to be on when you turn it on for Yom Tov.
It's on.
It has to be no. It has to be at least on, let's say, number two. It has to be on so that it's visibly on. It's red. when you want to make it hot.
Right. Right. Yes. Because I don't know. Let's say it's not visibly off. Let's say you can't see it being red. So then, how do I know that maybe, let's say it reached a certain temperature, and then maybe it shut off, and then maybe when it cooled down, then it shuts, then it goes back on.
That's only valid for the glass cooktop.
Yeah, the glass.
Yeah. If you have a regular electric,
the metal ones, yes.
Metal it is never red.
You're right. So I'm talking about.
I have one passover because I have to change my stove top.
Yeah, yeah.
The other one.
You're right. I'm sorry. I'm talking about the glass stovetops.
Right.
The glass stovetops. The other ones.
So what was the answer to the glass stovetops?
The glass stovetops. If it's red at the point where the glass stove, because we have glass stovetops, it's something you see it something's red, it goes on and off. Right. So when it's on, so then you can raise the temperature. When it's off, that it could be that there's no electric current flowing, and then you're starting it up again, which would be a problem.
So when you see the cycling,
when you see it red, then you can turn it up.
It gets lighter.
Right. Okay, so what? Like not the glass ones. On
what about the coil ones?
Coils.
What about the discs? Coil or disc? Metal.
They go on and off. An electrician explained to me that what that means, they go on and off, and he was able to finagle mine because I have red lights indicating when burners are on.
So which?
And he adjusted.
Well, I need to. I didn't look at. So tell me about this. I will look into this. What's the question?
There was an electrician came in.
What?
I have a coil.
But it's the same thing.
It's a plug-in. And what he had, it had red lights that indicated when the burners were on.
When the electricity was flowing.
No, when they were flowing or not.
Okay.
What he did was he adjusted it in such a way that the light only goes on now when the current is flowing.
Because flowing. All right. You're saying right. I heard about that. Right.
It was modified so that it now indicates.
So I only know from the glass stovetops. So you say the burner, you say it's hard to know when the current is flowing or not. You can't know. Okay.
Have a red light.
Right.
And when it's flowing, the light goes on.
If those are the facts.
Yes.
If the facts are as you say it. If the facts are that when the red indicator light is on, that indicates that the electric current is flowing, that you would be allowed to raise the temperature.
You would
if the facts are as you say. I did not. The only thing that I verified was about the glass stovetops. I did not verify.
I would imagine all of the glass stovetops. When you turn it on,
right,
a light goes on to show that the electricity has been turned on.
Right.
I don't know how that affects exactly the burner. I don't know.
What I'm saying is, Rav Heidemann told me it depends on the burner. It's with the glass stove tops. The burner itself. If it's red, then you know for sure there's electric current flowing.
If the burner is red and not the light.
Right. That's what he told me.
Really
so I don't know. I'm sure that's something you could find. I'll try to look into it.
We need to clarify.
Okay.
Right?
Okay. If so, okay. I have to call back.
The light is the indication.
If that's the case, what I'm saying is I don't know. I'm not sure if that's the case. I don't know for sure that's the case.
In other words, when I turn on the circuit breaker after I've switched my stovetop for Pesach, if I turn it on, the light will go on.
I understand, but let me ask you a question. Let's say the light goes on, and will that mean? Because let's say the heat builds up and then it stops. Will the light still remain on?
It'll stay on.
So that's a problem.
The light stays on.
But that's a problem.
No, the circuit's going on and off, though, even though the light is on.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. So that's a problem.
It cycles.
So that's my point. So that's not an indication. So the indication that you have is when the coil is red.
But doesn't the light mean that there's electricity on?
No.
You're saying no. I don't.
It cycles.
No,
it doesn't
flow at the same level.
Okay. Let's continue.
Did you say we're going to find out about the electric coil and disc, or what was that?
So what is that exactly? What is electric coil disc?
No, the electric. so it's a metal
right.
that you turn on.
Right.
And again, it has an indicator light that it's on, and it probably cycles also. But you, if you never real, oh, do you see it as red? Do you see it as red?
Okay. Do me, can you do me a favor? Can you send me a? Can you send me one? Just email it to me. Okay, Helene, can you email like the. No, fine, don't.
The brand?
No, the brand.
I don't have it. I have it.
Just a, oh, I could, are you a regular brand. You mean like a regular burner? Yeah, a burner. Yeah, okay, fine. Okay, so I'll find out about that. Okay.
That's two things. What does the red light mean?
Right. I think the red light's a problem because I think it's not. I don't think the red light is definitively indicates, and I'll look in the burner. Okay. Okay.
That's on the
glass top. Okay. Okay. Let's continue. Okay. Now, regarding another thing is these dimming lights. Okay, the dimming lights. So Rav Heidemann also told me that it's the same issue with a dimming light. Now, let's say that the light is on a little bit. Can you brighten it? So it's the same question. Are you closing new circuits? So Rav Heidemann also told me that when it came time for the dimming lights, it's the same thing that if the light is on already, then you can brighten a dimming light as well on Yom Tov.
So if you okay. have your lights just on a dimmer,
right.
you can move it up and down?
No, they said up.
Only up.
Only up.
Make it bright. You can never make it dim.
Correct.
Okay.
Okay. Because to answer, by the way, your point, we're not going to discuss the topic, that principle of mitoch, that it doesn't apply to kibbutz, which is extinguishing, only to havara, which is a broader conversation. Okay. But, okay. So now, Rav Heidemann is lenient about the Shabbos mode oven. Very briefly, the topic, many poskim disagree with this. The concept, the debate it revolves around the following. When you have the Shabbos mode oven in terms of raising the temperature, the issue there is that Rav Heidemann claims, he argues that because what you're doing is you're raising the temperature, and it will only start, the temperature will only it will rise not right away, at some point later. That would be gram havara. That's something that, if that's gram havara, that's like setting a timer, which is permitted on Yom Tov, which is you're not doing for immediate. Gram havara is forbidden on Shabbos, but it's permitted on Yom Tov. That's his argument. Rabbi Willig disagrees. Many poskim disagree.
They did when it first came out.
Rabbi Willig never agreed to this.
Not Rabbi Willig, but most of them, they did when it first came out. They
okay, could be. Oh, they all do Kol Kore. Rabbi Willig doesn't do. He doesn't do Kol Kore. He's when I spoke to him about that, he's like, I never held of it to begin with. I'm not the reason why he disagreed with that is because. So here's the thing, it's not functionally doing anything immediately, but behind the scenes, there are circuits closing immediately. How do you view that? In other words, what a number of poskim argue is that when you raise the temperature, even though it's not going to be raised immediately, it'll be something, the circuits are closing. Like it's like a question, can you type on a computer? This might be similar. Can you type on a computer if the screen's not on? You're doing stuff, but there's nothing visible immediately. So that's the debate.
It's the same thing as adding hot water to an urn.
Why?
Because it doesn't happen immediately.
No, but you're allowed to cook. No, that's not an issue. You're allowed to cook. You're not allowed to close a circuit, a new right. circuit on Yom Tov. Right. You're allowed to cook. On Yom Tov,
adding hot water to an urn is not cooking.
I'm saying so. It's permitted. Why? What's the issue with adding hot water to an urn?
I thought it's the same thing, but it makes it.
What?
It doesn't
close. No circuits are closed
immediately for it
to close this.
It's boiling only though. It's not closing any circuits.
It's not closing a circuit. Okay. It doesn't close a circuit immediately. So again, when we say it was the following, let me summarize what we have here. So I have to find out about the indicator lights, although I think I'm not sure if they're indicative of whether whatever they're on, that means the circuits are closed. I don't believe that to be the case, but I'll double check that. I'll check about the, you know, the birders.
If the red light is on, that would mean the circuit is open.
Circuit's closed. So it's closed. The electric current is flowing.
That's working.
Yeah. Let me summarize. We talked a lot. We talked about with Havara. We mentioned you can't strike a match, and we said that, you know, turning on a switch or closing a circuit is akin to Havara, which would be forbidden. If you're simply strengthening the electric current, that's permitted. And so we mentioned at least with the glass stovetop. So that would be as long as the you can see on the burner that there it's red. So then there's only one coil, according to Rav Heinemann, in each burner. So therefore, you're strengthening the coils, and that would be permitted to raise the temperature.
But only raise.
To raise the temperature, yes. And you could, he would also say you're allowed to brighten a dimming light if the light is on. He allows to raise the temperature of a Shabbos mode. Many poskim, including mine, disagree. But
I thought you could lower it for cooking.
You could lower what?
The temperature in the oven if you need it for your food.
You're allowed to.
You don't burn your food.
Oh, wait. You're allowed to. Well, there are two different issues. Right. You could lower it. You could lower the temperature if for the purpose of food. Right. We haven't talked about lowering yet.
But yeah, it has nothing to do with the burner.
Right.
The burner you can't lower,
right.
But the Shabbos mode oven you can.
What's it? No. I'm telling you,
Why can't you
burner?
You
can lower.
Why can't you lower burner?
Yeah.
I haven't done lowering yet. Let me do that. Again. Where are they lowering it? Again, Helene, I tell you, if someone asks me, I'm just telling you, there are some postkeep who allow to raise the temperature in Shabbos mode. That's not my practice. Right? Willick disagrees because he holds that when you're closing the circuit immediately. So there, I mean, so Heidemann's a big poster. So keep it. We keep it one step.
Right?
If you do that, you hold it here. But that's not my. What? I don't know what to tell you. If people ask me, I tell you that's what I hold. I follow Rabbi Willick on these issues. Okay. Now, in terms of showering. So the issue with showering is that in the old days, so this was not davar shava b'chol nefesh. This is normally ochol nefesh, this is an example which Shira brought about since it's permitted for food purposes, also permitted for your own needs on Yom Tov. So when it comes to showering, so one of the conditions of having a blacha permitted has to be shava l'chol nefesh. It has to be something which is, equal good for everyone. It's not only done that your average person uses it. It's not only done for a small subset of people. In the old days, not everyone needed to shower. People didn't regularly shower. So the notion of showering and heating water so you can fully shower was not very common. The question is, what do we do about this nowadays? So according to some poskim, you're allowed to shower at Yom Tov in warm water in situations of discomfort, which may be the case for those who typically shower on a daily basis. The Rabbi Schefter has another take on this, where he says that there is a gzeira. They had these like mikvah attendants, or where they said, normally, you shouldn't have a problem on Shabbos. Let's say the water was heated before Shabbos. So what should be the problem of bathing on Shabbos? If the water was heated before Shabbos, you have to do anything on Shabbos. What happened was the bath attendants would say that, oh yeah, we heated it before Shabbos, but they really didn't. So when they got wind of that, so then they said, so you can't bathe with water even that was heated before Shabbos. So that was the gzera. That was the decree, and so then the question was, would this decree also apply to Yom Tov, and what? This only if it's hot water versus warm water. So the bottom line is that it's probably preferable if it's someone's very uncomfortable, and they typically shower every day. If someone's very uncomfortable, there are I got this from the CRC. He said you can shower on Yom Tov in warm water in situations of great discomfort. And I pointed out that, for a lot of people, there is great discomfort if you don't shower on a regular basis. I've showered on Yom Tov.
Yeah?
I have showered on Yom Tov, yeah.
I feel like this is literally
stuff. Okay, so...
That was life-changing.
Okay.
Isn't there only one arm at a time?
Yeah, so it's better. So I try to. So I try to tell people. The truth is, that's not. Yeah, no. So I try to tell people. I try to tell people that they shouldn't try to do a little bit of a shinoi. It's my own craziness. I actually heard someone else also suggest that because you're not allowed to squeeze water out of your hair because that's a prohibition of schita. So it's actually important to try. You can actually sort of pat down. You know, you shouldn't really. There are also a lot of issues that could go wrong when you shower from a halachic standpoint. Right, you can't use bar soap. You can only use liquid.
Also, some women lose their hair very fast in the shower. Like if they don't wash their hair, it's gonna fall out.
Right. So that's like a psik reishe issue. That's if it will definitely happen versus if it won't definitely happen. Uh-huh. So I don't know. I don't know if it will.
Wait, so if it definitely happens.
It definitely happened. So I'm saying so that might be.
Discomfort is overpowering.
No. So why do you have to put? Can you? It will definitely come out. Is it already out? I don't know. Yeah, I mean, right. Some people may not wash their hair because of that issue. I'm saying, I don't know. No, you can wash your hair for the whole year, just not Yom Tov. I don't know what to tell you. In other words, if what you're doing, you're going to definitely be pulling out hairs. If you're definitely going to be pulling out hairs, so I don't know the facts. I can't comment on the facts. Okay, so if it's already out, that's not an issue. I don't know the facts. Okay. Yeah, but let me finish the showering thing. So again, you should use liquids. Again, let's focus. You can use liquid soap. You should use a bar of soap, and you should be careful not to squeeze water out of your hair. You'd be careful if you use shampoo. You should be careful because because when you're squeezing it out,
that's what I'm saying.
To lather, it's a problem. I think it's a big problem. If you just let the water run on the hair, then that's okay. But I'm saying you have to be right. I'm saying if you just put the shampoo on and you let the water just go on the hair and come out like that, that's fine. But if you're squeezing water out of the hair, if you could pat it down, but if you're squeezing water out of the hair, so that's an issue. What? So that's what I'm saying. So Rav Schachter. So again, Rav Schachter may hold that it's. I try to make it a little bit warm. Although I saw someone say that Rav Schachter really. I don't know exactly what he holds because I heard once that he held it should be warm. But then the question: what's his definition of warm? But you probably can. I would anyway tell people to make it not as boiling hot. Again,
as they would know.
The answer might be no. So I'm saying according to Rav Schachter. I'm trying to explain to you. So according to Rav Schachter, so he is worried about this gzeira of using hot water on Shabbos. Okay, that was even preheated before. So there's like a maybe that only applies to Shabbos and not Yom Tov, and maybe only applies to hot water, not warm water. And then the question is how he defines warm. So that's also might. So some people might be. So I try to be machmir like that, But there's grounds if you're feeling very uncomfortable to shower with hot water. I just think as a practical perspective, you should do it differently because people are bound to make mistakes, and we don't want to violate prohibitions while we're doing that. So you have to just pat it down. You can use a towel just to pat down. My Willie is not into showering because I said to him, but that no the reason the, I'll tell you no he's into showering he's into showering, but he's not in favor of showering. I said Rav Rav Neuberger, I listened to him. He once said, like, if it's like a second day, he's only on second day Yom Tov. Second day Yom Tov. Rav Willing is like, he's saying, you know, when I said, what about Simchas Torah? When Dad, he says, 30 years ago we did this, and you know, and we were fine. So that's his mahalach a little bit. That's his approach like that. But again, when I quoted you here at the CRC, which is a reputable, kashrus and halachic organization, said we may shower on Yom Tov in warm water situations of great discomfort. That's what CRC said.
I'm
not
trying
to
attack you, but
you know, the one thing you can tell us, Rob Willing doesn't hold for the others, and you don't, and then the other things, Rob Willing is.
Yeah. So the answer, right? So that's a fair point. So the answer is that it, when, if I see that, let's say a mainstream, let's say halachic, you know, organization. The issues that he has when it comes to that, also with showering, is not, it's not purely halachic. I don't think. I think it's generally like, it's
not in
the
spirit.
It's, yeah, that's what he thinks. It might not be in the spirit. So if it's very difficult, it's very uncomfortable, I think it's not like a pure halachic. And again, like Rav Neuberger, like there are others who certainly allow it. And his issue, I don't think, is purely halachic. It's more of like a minhag kind of thing, so it's a little bit different in terms of that.
But yeah, like I said, I'm sitting here and I'm having this trouble having heard just now about the Shabbos world in the oven.
But isn't this store K a
reputable? Yes.
But also
store. Yes. No. So what I'm saying like this. No. So I generally. What?
Okay. You put me in this like really awkward place.
Okay. But some of it, I think, is also like a personal subjective thing. Like, isn't there like a concept of an
No, I'm saying so. Simchas Yom Tov. This issue of discomfort, how uncomfortable you are, and it's a Simchas Yom Tov concept. So what I'm saying is, when it comes to showering, there are these factors that you raise a good point. When it comes to showering, there are these factors which are very subjective. What's their simcha? What's considered tzorach Yom Tov? Like, what's their tzorach? What's considered simcha? And these are different people have different categories. So, okay, so that might be my failing, that when I'm very uncomfortable, so it's like, you know, so for me, like, I try not to, I won't necessarily shower as regularly as I would on a regular day, but if I'm feeling uncomfortable, so there's more subjectivity as opposed to a, you know, purely, you know, halachic position. Again, if you want to follow up Heidemann, you can. I'm not going to tell you.
You brush your teeth. But do it with mouthwash on Shabbos, or you can just brush regularly?
There are different opinions about that.
The bar of soap for
you're allowed to brush your teeth?
There are different opinions about that. Salvation allowed it, but Willing doesn't allow it. Do what you normally do. Okay, let's continue. I can't tell you what to do. I'm not gonna. You have to do this. I won't take offense. Do what you feel comfortable with. That's your minhag. You can continue your minhag if you want. Okay, you didn't ask me. Okay. So when it comes to kibbutz, when it comes to extinguishing a flame, let's try to finish up here. When it comes to extinguishing a flame.
Okay.
You may extinguish or lower a flame only if it's for a Yom Tov purpose. Therefore, you can lower a flame to prevent the food that is cooking from burning. However, you may not simply lower or turn off the flame when we are done cooking. Therefore, even though you can barbecue on Yom Tov, okay, you're allowed to barbecue on Yom Tov, obviously you need an existing match to light the grill. So I know Sherry is going to tell me about this cryptic tshuva of Moshe Feinstein about turning off the gas. Okay, good. So the minute there are those. The general minhag is not turning off the flame or the gas when we're not barbecuing. Again, the question is, when you're turning off the gas, is that real kibbutz? That's a discussion. Seems the general consensus is that we don't turn off the gas or the flame when you're not barbecuing. Now, you can hint to a non-Jew once or twice to turn off the gas when we finish barbecuing, by neither mentioning the malacha nor asking him to do something. But you should not ask the same non-Jew to do that on a regular basis. Let me explain what this means. So what you can do is the following. If you have a barbecue on Yom Tov. So you could say that the way that you hint, you're allowed to hint to a non-Jew to remove something. not to create something, but to remove something which impedes something else. Okay, you know, you want to save the gas, right? So you're allowed to hint. The way you hint is by describing the situation. You neither ask him or her to do something, nor do you mention the malacha. You can't mention the malacha, can't ask him or her to do something. You're merely describing the situation. So, for example, you say, wow, the gas is on and I'm done with the barbecue. So do you want me to turn it off? I cannot tell you what to do. The gas is on, I'm done with the barbecue. It's awkward, but it works. Halakhically.
You say it enough times.
I'm telling you, that's the legal definition. That's the legal definition of hinting. So I asked Rabbi Willing, I asked him the following question. I said, so in practice, right? In practice. So let's say you're talking about grilling. So we're talking about grilling on, there's a halacha in the Shulchan Aruch. I think we did Amir Lanach, we talked about. There's a halacha which says that if you hint enough times, if you plan the hinting, if you, for example, like you forget to turn on a light or turn off a light and in a permitted way you have a non-Jew do it and you didn't plan it, that's not regularly telling the Jew to do this. But if you have like a routine of like, you know, every Shabbos I'm going to have you do this and every Shabbos I'm going to hint to you this, it no longer becomes a hint. It's as if you're telling the non-Jew. Now, even though you're using the words, you do the hinting words, but if it's like pre-planned, I'm going to do this, you know, every time, so then that's a problem. So I asked him, I said, well, listen, when we're talking about barbecue, we're talking about, you know, Pesach, most people don't kosher their grill. Maybe some people do. There are ways to do it, but I'm saying, so we're talking about Shavuos and Sukkos. So to have someone turn off a grill, is that regularly, is that routinely, every Sukkos, every Shavuos, is that really... He wasn't sure. So like, it might not be a problem. It might not be a problem, you know, to, you know, with every Sukkos, every Shavuos. He's not so excited about that, but it's, I'm saying that that's where the gray area is. Certainly, if you're stuck, whatever, the first time you can go to a non-Jew and ask a non-Jew to if you turn out a grill and every once in a while, let's say you grill every year or whatever, and, you know, on a Yom Tov, and you have a non-Jew turn off once a year, you know, if it's not on a regular basis, so that might be okay. You could also, they have a timer, which ours is broken now, we have to get a new timer, but you can get a timer that's attached to the barbecue grill, to the gas line. So they have them, yeah. Alan Pelko pointed that out to me. So then, right? So if you have the timer, so that the gas only flows for a certain period of time, so that's great. So then you turn on for like an hour's worth of gas, and when it stops, it stops, and then you solve all the problems.
Can that be for everything?
For what?
Can you set a timer for your oven? Can you set a timer for your
oven? You could. Yes. Yes.
Do not attach a timer to your oven.
Oh, okay. So I can't comment.
But what about your burner? Your sink burner? Can you attach a timer to your burner?
I have.
A lot of people have timers. A lot of people do timers for the hot plates. For hot plates.
I have the electrician put it in the line.
Right.
Right.
So we can set it before Yantif.
Right. Right.
Doesn't have to stay on all night or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Charcoal.
Yeah. What about it?
Instead of gas.
That's okay, same problem, thing. That's not a problem at all.
Right, that's what I'm asking.
Right. Oh, by the
way. So if you have a candle that you.
Yeah, that's great.
And you just start.
Right. By the way, another thing you can do, so it depends if it's hooked up to your gas line or not. If there's a way you get like a small propane tank.
And let it.
They just let it go off. It's $10, whatever. So that's another way to grill on Yom Tov. You know. Some people, our grill is now hooked up to our gas line, but we used to for it didn't used to. It was just. The propane tank,
right,
and then,
yeah.
I'm saying. You get like a small. You have these big tanks. You get a smaller tank and just use it. You use it up, and then when it's gone, it's gone. You're not.
Wait till towards the end.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Oh, that's a problem. Will it turn on immediately or not? Will it definitely turn? So might is not a problem. It's only a problem if it will definitely turn on.
Well, if you're very low and you put a lot of water in, it will turn on.
So that's
the water.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was that?
Right. Okay.
I boil it
in the
park.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Right. Okay. So yeah, they make that clear. Right. Obviously, obviously, whatever he said, whatever he said, you could, you know, use an urn or whatever. If the lights go on immediately, if circuits are closed immediately, it's a problem.
Okay.
If it may or may not, if it may or may not, just like you can open up a refrigerator door. It may, the engine, the motor may or may not go on. That's not a problem. It's only a problem if when you do something, that it will definitely go on. Okay.
Well, so doesn't it matter if, like, you know, so for example, like the little light on the urn, okay,
right,
you know, can waffle on or off depending on the temperature, and you're not really sure when that would go on or off.
If it's not clear, then...
It's unclear, and especially if you don't care about it, like, does that also... impact it.
It might. It's better.
Like you're not. Your intention is not to.
Right. So that. Right. So again, that's certainly. That's. So maybe if you're Rav Heineman, so that might work. In other words, it's the same issue, right?
You're not seeing anything.
No, I understand. So maybe, right? That's maybe. In other words, there. Just putting a piece of tape over it, does that mean, is that better than, is that worse than internal circuitry? I don't know. What I'm saying, I'd rather, I don't think we should rely on that. I'm sorry, yeah, you had a question for me.
If that's okay. I was under the impression that preparing one day of Chag for the next day is similar to preparing, let's say, on Shabbat for after Shabbat.
Okay.
Is that
yes,
correct?
For the most part.
You take something out of the freezer that's already like cooked on day one of Chag that you want to defrost for day two of Chag?
That's a good question.
Right, so that would be...
Because you're not cooking.
It's already cooked.
Right.
You're preparing something for the next day. But if you waited for the second day, it's frozen.
Right.
So I never knew what to do, so I always kind of aired the caution and just threw it out.
I think...
You could take it out the night and leave it out.
It happens.
No, I understand.
You forget. I don't know.
Yeah.
What's the situation?
Right.
Or you're scared you're going to forget. I don't know. Or if it's a 3-day lunch, if you cook something...
I think that is an issue, but I'll double check.
So,
you know.
You're not doing any malacha.
No, it's not only a malacha issue. It's also...
So you can't prepare.
You can't prepare even non malacha. But there's something. I think that is an issue.
Something that's cooked. You can't. It isn't going to change its form or even stick first.
No, but that's something different. That because that I think is okay because that you're preventing it from you're sort of maintaining its.
I think
put something in the freezer versus the refrigerator. So that I believe we are lenient on because you're. You want it to remain fresh, so you're trying to maintain the status quo. So that's the difference as opposed to this, which you're preparing.
You do that on Shabbos as well.
Yeah.
And what about soup?
That's going to change.
Right, that's what I'm saying. So it's not soup, even on
Yom Tov.
To put soup?
What with it?
Putting soup in the freezer on Yom Tov.
Putting it in the freezer?
You're keeping it fresh.
I will double check that.
Taking a piece of meat. This is liquid.
No, I'm not sure if I'm so bothered by that, but let me. I'll look into that to be the good citizen.
Did you say I may have missed it about dimming lights?
Yeah. So I'm saying is if it's odd, Rav Heineman is of the opinion that again it's just one circuit, and if it's not. Yeah, even not related to cooking. Yeah. Right. He thinks to brighten it. He thinks you could brighten it. But by the way, we're not lowering. We'll get in a second. We'll get there in a second. But what I'm saying is, by the way, I don't know if it's a great idea to do it.
Right.
I just tell you, like, I'm not sure if it's a great idea to be in practice of brightening dimming lights because I think it's very easy to go up and down. So I don't think, again, Mishas Adchak, for some reason, it's really dark. And once in a while, we want to try to avoid those situations. So but I'm telling you...
I don't know. Does it save electricity by doing it?
Well, that's not a reason to allow it on Yom Tov.
Let's say a kid lowered it or something.
Right. So you're not allowed to lower a dimming light. There's no purpose, really.
If a kid lowered it, you need to raise it because you're...
What I'm saying is there are grounds to allow it. What I'm saying is it's best to try to really avoid that because it's very easy to, like... It's not very easy to flip up and down.
What about ice making, either electric version from your fridge or just...
It's the same rules on Shabbos. Some say Bishas. There's no difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov in that regard. If there are a lot of guests, the Shmir Shabbos writes that if you can have a lot of guests and you didn't do it beforehand, so there are grounds to be lenient. There's no difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov in that regard because the Malacha Molid. There's no difference.
I turn mine as electric, so I turn mine on for Shabbos.
Right. Right.
I turn off the switch. So whatever before Shabbos, I turn off the switch. So the bucket is full. But on a 3-day ice, that bucket is not going to make enough ice reactive.
So you have to buy
a bag of ice.
So that's what I'm saying.
If the switch is on, then
the switch is off, and when it uses up her.
No, I'm saying, but the switch is on. So what happens when the switch is on? And you're not doing anything, or what?
Then lowers the
thing. Right. So when you're taking, yeah.
That's why we don't open that, we don't move that drawer out of the shelf because.
Well, you put the wire up.
Is that considered so right?
I don't have one in my refrigerator.
I have a Shabbos mode on the refrigerator. Yeah. When I turn it on, it turns off the ice.
I can
only
open the bottom drawer.
I'm going to check. Is that considered enough of a tour? I'm going to look into that. That's a good question. The question is, that considered enough of a tour? Yeah. No, I understand. I'm going to look into that.
Ridiculous. It's a lowering a flame only if it's for a Yom Tov purpose.
Right.
So let's say it's going to heat up your kitchen on Shavuos when it's very hot.
Yeah.
And you want to lower the flame to keep your kitchen cooler to make it more comfortable.
Right. So
is that a Yom Tov purpose?
What
about a danger?
Safety.
Well,
it's left on 8.
So you're right. If it's for a danger, but then the question should you be doing the halachat? You shouldn't create that situation.
Okay.
You shouldn't create the situation. So that's the point. The point is that kibbuy, going back to Shira's point, that this notion of mitoch, which says that because you can do it for a permitted purpose, for cooking, you could do it for other bodily needs or other needs, that doesn't apply to the melacha of kibbuy. That's a long discussion. This principle of mitoch, for kibbuy, it's only for food purposes. It's not for non-food purposes. Did I not write that?
It says only a big story.
For Yom Tov, yeah, okay. Okay, yeah, yeah. It's really a cooking purpose. Yeah, yeah, okay, I'll change that. Yeah, I'll change that. Okay.
You're saying if you go over to Hyman and raise your oven,
right.
Let's just say it up, to 400,
right.
Whatever. You can't lower it down unless you need a lower
for cooking purposes, right? Not because it's too hot. Yeah, so that's not. But you're right because the principle of mitoch doesn't apply to kibbuy. It's a big sugya in the Gemara, and we paskin that kibbuy this principle of mitoch,
right.
Which is just like you can cook, just like you can do these malachos for food. You can also for yom tov needs. It does not apply to kibbuy.
Keep food warm. Like after you cook it, keep it warm. And
You don't want it to burn,
you
right?
Can lower it.
Mm-hmm. Right, because you don't want it to burn, right? Okay. Correct. Right. Okay, so you could not. If you want to, let's say you have chicken and you want to keep the chicken warm, but if you keep it on 500, it'll overcook. So then you could then you can lower it. Yes.
All right.
Now, okay, so you can't lower a dimming light. Rav Heidemann also told me, that in a stovetop, we're talking about a glass stovetop, if the coil is not bright red and the setting is on medium or high, then you can assume that no electric current is flowing through the coil and you can lower the temperature. Understand that?
You can lower it if it's off.
Right, and how do you know that it's off? Forget about the indicator light. He said that if it's on medium or high, and it's not red, and there's no bright red coil, then you know at that point the electric current is not flowing and you can lower it. If it's on low, it's not a proof. If it's on low, the current could still be flowing even though it's not red.
So wait a second. If it's on low and the current is flowing, even though it's not red,
right,
then why can't you raise it?
Oh, if you know that, if you know for sure. But if it's on low and it's not and the current is not bright red, you don't know one way or the other. There's no indication one way or the other. If the light is red, then you know definitely there's electric current flowing and you can raise the temperature. If it's not bright red and it's on high or medium, so then you know that there's no current flowing and you can lower it. If it's on low and there's no red light flowing, it is unclear and therefore you cannot move it up or down. It's not clear at that point.
If there's no red light on high reading, does that mean it's broken?
No. If there's no, Javi. No, it's fine. I have to ask questions also. It's fine. If there's no bright red light on, and it's on high or medium, so what that means is. No. The coil itself. What that means is, let's say it was heated to a certain temperature. And now, right now, we don't need to heat it because it's still hot. It's still hot. Like sometimes you could heat something up, right? And what's it? And then you know, it doesn't need to stay on because it's already hot.
So if you have a not glass top,
right,
you have a coil,
right,
and it has an indicator light, and the indicator light tells you if it's cycling on or off.
What I'm saying is, I don't know if those facts are accurate.
Oh.
Okay.
Can't even tell.
You could always cook. I'm talking about raising temperature and lowering temperature. I'm saying on the stovetop, on a glass stovetop, you're allowed to raise the temperature if the red coil is on. You're allowed to lower the temperature if it's on medium or high and the red coil is off.
Not for cooking, generally.
You know what?
Yes.
Start cooking,
These rabbis, they just don't know the problems.
What does that mean? I'm trying to solve your problems. What does that mean? We're trying to solve a lot of your problems. They're creating all these things to solve problems.
The other thing you mentioned Shabbos mode ovens and electric ovens, but what about the old gas ones that had just dials
for the oven? So that's
easy.
There's nothing. Right. Right. Correct. If you have the gas stovetops, that's fine. You could just turn the.
But wait a second. On the electric ovens.
Wait.
I have electric. Electric ovens with the Shabbos mode. I still have the electric oven. I specifically got that it has a knob. It's not digital or anything.
Okay.
So I turn the knob to the temperature. To raise it.
Right.
I can do it for the purposes of. What do I have to wait for?
You're talking about an oven?
I don't know. I'm so confused.
You have to wait till it cycles on. Usually, in
how do I know if
that,
it cycles on?
You're saying an oven to turn it on? You have a knob, so that. You're saying it's a knob.
It's a knob.
So when you turn it on, so how do you? So
my Shabbos mode is set. The ovens are on.
Right.
And I just turn a knob.
And what happens when you turn the knob?
Let's finish up.
We can move a muksa item directly to access food. Certain raw products like pasta is muksa on Shabbos. Why? Because pasta is raw pasta. Certain raw food products like pasta, they're muksa on Shabbos because they're not fit for human consumption. They're not muksa on Yom Tov. because obviously you could cook it, okay? And they're not, right? And you could prepare them for consumption on Yom Tov. An electric lamp is not muksa, obviously, because you could move it. You're allowed to measure spices on Yom Tov when a precise measurement is needed to ensure that the food tastes good. If you need to measure precisely, because a lamp is, you can use the light on Yom Tov.
As long as it's on.
Right, as long as it's on.
You can measure any food.
That you require precise measurement on Yom Tov. On Yom Tov. Yes, on Yom Tov, not Shabbos. On Yom Tov. Yes. 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 Yom Tov, you can. Okay.
That was a list. We need a list